Good morning and welcome to Jump In Tucson. I'm your host, Ted Maxwell. You are joining Jump In Tucson's Tuesday show, which is the engagement hour. We focus on getting involved, talking to prominent members throughout the community that have not only done well in business or in the public's eye, but they've also gotten involved. It's easy to sit around and talk about what we'd like to change, but unless you're willing to step forward and take some chances, put yourself out there, and some people are going to do it very publicly. They're going to serve in political office, perhaps in public safety. Others are going to do it in the back scenes where they're not quite out in the public eye, but that could be through support of their favorite nonprofits or others. And today, I am honored to have Lisa Lavallo, who has done all of those. And Lisa is the Vice President Market Leader of Cox Communications, Southwest Region. But Lisa is Tucson. I've got one full page of my introduction, so you're going to hear different parts of it early. But she grew up in Tucson, graduated from the U of A, but she didn't just graduate from the U of A. She was the student body vice president there. She played on the women's basketball team, which I want to get more into to find out, especially if you had a nickname, because over the course of today's show, you're going to hear she's had quite a few nicknames in her lifetime. And then she even in 2017 went back and received her MBA from Eller with honor. So Lisa, thank you for being with me today.
Good to see you, Ted. Thanks for the invitation.
So you grew up in Tucson?
I did.
Can you give us a little background on that? And you've got a long and distinguished career, which we'll cover over the course of the show today, but you never really... I mean, you left Tucson for parts of time, but you always came back. Can you kind of tell us about growing up, your experience at the U of A, and why you are bonded so well with Tucson?
Yeah, well, my parents came to Arizona from Minnesota in 1963. So I was raised here. I was actually born in California, but my parents came back to Tucson. My dad went to law school at U of A, and my mom got her master's in education, and they just loved Tucson. I mean, they're both from small towns in Minnesota, and they went to California for a little while and said, this is not for us. And so I just had an incredible childhood, a great youth experience in Tucson. My education, I went to Fort Lowell, Towns and Junior High, but they're both now medical centers, I think, and then Sabino High School and on to the U of A. And my family really felt strongly, my parents felt strongly about going to state universities. They really pushed that for us. They felt like they paid taxes into the system and that tuition was very affordable. And so all my siblings, I have two siblings, could go to college, and my parents could afford to send us there because it was a good value. And so when I thought about going out of state, I said to my mom and dad, well, what about UCLA? They're like, listen, we'll give you whatever it costs to go to any of the state schools, and then you just pay the difference. And then when I found out what it costs to go out of state, I was like, what? So it was always kind of embedded in me that that's our home school, that's our state is going to provide this opportunity. So that's how the U of A became part of me. And then when I went to work for Procter & Gamble, I went to California for about 17 years and then came back. And my family's here. My heart's here. My parents were here. So it just called me back. And I've been really happy having made that decision in 2000.
So as a student athlete at the U of A,
yeah.
What inspired you then to take your first chance to really get engaged, more so than you already were, and run for student body vice president of the university?
Well, you know, it's an interesting story because, like I said, my parents paid for my education. And so I had an opportunity to just experience whatever was at the U of A. I didn't have to worry about raising a family or paying for my schooling or working while I went to school. So I was really in a privileged situation to just go for it. And so when I actually won that election, actually the only election I've won, my dad said to me, he quoted Milton, he said, you know, he also serves who only stands and waits. And his message to me at that moment was, there are lots of people on this campus who could do as good or better job than you, but aren't in a privileged position to do it, to be in student council, so to speak. And so, you know, my parents always supported me in what I did, whether it was basketball, writing for the Arizona Daily Wildcat, being in a sorority, running for student government. But again, Ted, I had all the opportunity available to me to go for those things. So it was a lot of fun. I learned a lot. I got a lot of cool experiences, but I'm very aware of the fact that I was in a privileged position to have all those dalliances while I went to school.
So it sounds to me like your parents had a big impact on
Huge.
who you are mm-hmm. as a person and kind of to the point of why you continue throughout your career, and we'll talk about a lot of the different things you've done, have remained involved to this day. And I've got a sense that even after you're
For sure.
done in the business world, you're going to be involved. So give me a little bit more detail on your parents.
Yeah. So my dad was an attorney in town. He passed away 3 years ago. He had pretty severe dementia, so it was kind of a blessing that he was able to, you know, find peace. My mom is at the Hacienda of the Canyons. She lives right next door to her little sister, who's 83. My mom just turned 84 last week, and she's thriving and enjoying her 80s, her senior years, right? But they're great. They're very, you know, very self-made people, both valued education, very much hard work. You know, we always had jobs, whether that was in the house doing chores or as soon as we could work, we were expected to get a job. And so my parents had a really very North Star to work ethic and values and family and doing the right thing. And being aware of how much privilege you have and how that makes you responsible for doing more for others. So I would say that was kind of my how I viewed growing up.
Well, that's actually parents and family influence has probably been the number one focus that my guests have so far said. I mean, it's we're only into the second month of the show, and most of them have given that from the family. So when we come back from the break, what I'd like to do is then go into some of your early business career and how throughout that time you grew into more and more involvement. Appreciate everybody being with us today. You're listening to Jump In Tucson, the Engagement Hour, and my guest today is Lisa Lavallo, Vice President and Market Leader of Cox Communications Southwest Region and a true Tucsonan. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Wake Up Tucson. I'm your host, Ted Maxwell, and with me today is Lisa Lavallo, the Vice President Market Leader of Cox Communications. We kind of discussed your growing up and what got you started, but obviously there's a lot that happens early in our life that kind of sets our ground, especially when we're out on our own and making our way. And you already teased it in the first section. You took a job out of the U of A as and went to work for Procter & Gamble in Southern California. So what, 17 years? I actually didn't realize it had been that long that you were out in Southern California. What were your takeaways from your time there? What, you know, were your successes? What were your hard knocks?
Well, it was great to have an opportunity to go to a great company right off of the U of A campus. You know, again, crediting the university with creating an opportunity for me like that right out of school. And then going to the big city, so to speak, right? You know, just dealing with a huge, massive metropolis, so different than Tucson, so different in its culture, so different in its rhythm, its speed, its pace. And then on top of that, you know, having to figure out how to navigate a corporate life, to learn the products and services, to just deal with your first job. And the ambition that comes with that, you know, you come out of school and you get your first job and you really want to do well and, you know, working so many hours because you don't know how to work, so you just work more, right? When you're young, you just have to just put in the time. And at P&G, they had rigorous training, so it was great that I was getting that great business foundation. And then I had LA, right? I had Southern California in my face every day. You know, I mean, it's just no getting around that, from earthquakes to tire blowout on the freeway to getting punched in the face at a 7-Eleven. I mean, I really...
You actually got punched in the face at a 7-Eleven?
Yeah, and I got bit by a dog at a Ralph's grocery store. I mean, I was like,
what did you do to get punched in the face at a 7-Eleven?
So, you know, this is the day we didn't have cell phones, right? So I pull in my Chevy Celebrity company car, this big, huge car, into 7-Eleven in Santa Monica. And I go to get on the payphone because we called in a service and they gave us our messages. And I'm dressed like a flight attendant because it's the 80s. That's what we wore, like a little blue suit and a little tie and pumps and legs pantyhose. And so I'm sitting there picking up my messages and this little lady kind of pulls her car and kind of cockeyed and it's kind of close to this other car. And this man gets out of the car and he walks over to this woman. And he starts yelling at her, you know, and like, I'm like, this is kind of crazy. So I walk to the curb. So I'm almost eye to eye with the guy because I'm standing in the curb and I said to him, hey, just back off a little bit. Just back off a little bit. And he got in my face, Ted, and he like pointed his finger in my face and he's like, you back off. And I'm like, hey, buddy, just back off. Boom, he cocked me right in the eye right there. So I went into the 7-Eleven. I was kind of stunned, right? It's like stunned. So I just walked in the 7-Eleven, right? And he got in his car and drove off. I didn't know what to do. I mean, it was, I've never been hit in the face like that. And so I got a big black eye, and that's like a month or two on the job. I've got this big black eye. So, yeah, it was, that was a good welcome to Santa Monica and the crazies that are there. And then one day I was pulling into a, I pulled into a Ralph's to go into the grocery store to shop. And I turned around, and this dog that it came out of its the window of the car and bit me in the arm. Like I had like a black eye and a dog bite. It was this was great.
Welcome to Southern California.
Yeah, and you then know, the Ontario earthquake. I was in Ontario. Yep, so after those three incidents, I'm like, should I go home? Is this a message?
And you still made it 17 years. It's just kind of, you know, that's kind of the scary part is maybe some of, I grew up in LA, so I can talk as much, trash about it as I want, but it maybe it foretold, you know, some of the future of what else happens, you know. I mean, I've got a couple great 7-Eleven stories, but they all related to how people who worked there defended the place. And now we've gotten to the point where we're no longer doing that. That's a whole nother issue that maybe we'll get to later. 17 years with Procter & Gamble.
And not then, 17 years with P&G. Oh, I was only with P&G for 7 years.
And at that point though, you started your own business?
Yes.
Okay. I think it's important for you to kind of talk about the lessons learned, but what I really like you to do is relate your experience starting your own business in California versus starting one right now in Arizona. The just last week, the several Arizona firms made the Inc.'s regional list of fastest growing small companies. And they divide into five regions throughout the United States, and we're in the Southwest region. And almost a fifth of the companies were in Arizona. That made the list, 33 of them. Unfortunately, they all were in the Valley. Mm-hmm. So having your experience of starting a company and learning from it and learning kind of do it in LA, and it turned out to be successful, as I understand, you at some point then turned the company over, sold it probably, I'm guessing. Do you see this region, or what can this region do better to support small companies and their ability to grow?
Well, you know, Ted, it's interesting because I had the benefit of my dad starting that business in Arizona. And so I was a teleworker, I guess you could say, for a few years, because I lived in California and the company was based here. We called it our world headquarters. It was Tucson, Arizona, because we imported products from all over the world into the United States. And we were here in Tucson. It was an affordable place for my parents to be. There were no boundaries to us being able to set up our business. But we didn't just rely on the local economy. That was probably the differentiator. And so we were able to build our company on a national basis. But again, Tucson was our home. So as far as starting a business, ease of opening a business, good tax situation, all that, we got those benefits. And so that's kind of how we started thinking about how do you bring products from around the world to the United States into different grocery entities. And we did that on a national basis for about 15 years.
Okay.
And what's interesting about being in Arizona was we had our small business when 9/11 happened. And when 9/11 happened, all the ports across the whole entire world, in the U.S., as you know, Ted, being knowing 9/11 probably better than anybody, we couldn't get our products into the United States because all the container ships and ports were closed and there was a backlog. And if you had perishable products, they were going to never get to their end user or end to the customer. And so at the time, the only thing we could do was reach out to Senator McCain. And what's interesting in Arizona, because of the size of Arizona and how long a lot of Arizonans have been here, you have a relationship. My dad could reach out to Senator McCain for help. You know, so that's just an example of, it's nice to be the size of state we have. You have the opportunity to reach out to Mark Kelly or to Kyrsten Sinema or to Juan Sciscamani or to Grijalva. You know, these people are in the community. We have enough people that you can actually get to know and network into having a relationship with folks who can help you. And I think that's an important advantage.
Do you see that those kind of opportunities? I'm glad to hear that the company that you then was started by your dad and you worked in that business, obviously it turned out to be very successful. Do you see the rest of the support system that you had and your family had back then to start a small company still in existence in this region?
I mean, at the end of the day, a small business is only as strong as the owner, right? And so the passion of the owner of the business always drives it, the resiliency that's required to have a small business, the never say die, the willingness. And I remember these times of, you know, laying in bed at night thinking, you put a second mortgage on your home to make sure you're making payroll for your people. I mean, it's just having the guts to do it. And so I think there are plenty of things that allow that to take place. And no, it's not perfect. You know, permitting's difficult. You know, there's all these kind of things in terms of working your business through government issues or regulatory challenges or public policy related things. But at the end of the day, it's, do you have the grit to be in a small business and to overcome the problems that every business has? I remember when I came from Procter & Gamble to a small startup with my dad, we had so many problems, Ted. I mean, 9/11, I mean, we can't even get our product here. And so I said to my dad, we don't even have a business. We just have problems. This thing sucks, right? And he said, you know what? If you've got problems, you got customers. So every business has problems. So the learning is, it's the business that solves the problems that wins and grows. And I think that's at the heart of everything, no matter where you are. If you're a small company and a growing company, that's what you have to be great at, is problem solving. And you have to see that as your job as a leader, to see that as your job so that your employees and people that work with you aren't afraid to bring a problem to you, because you want the problem to come to you when it's small, not when it blows up into a disaster. So if you have a culture of, I'm not sure I need help, then we can get this problem solved at a very fast and inexpensively. It's when people hold their problems back that you have a disaster. So I had a whiteboard in my office and I wrote, bring me your problems, I will solve them, as kind of a mantra that I learned from my dad working in a small business. And I've carried that through into pretty much everything.
That was going to be my follow-up question to that. Did you take that attitude with you, and we're going to skip over when you taught at the U of A, we'll come back to that a little bit, but did you take that attitude with you when you went back to, as you defined Procter & Gamble, as the corporate world when you joined Cox?
Yeah, and I mean, definitely, you know, a larger company has different challenges than a smaller company, but still has problems and still has to deal with people and customers. So, you know, all those lessons from being in a small entrepreneurial venture, some of those learnings fit in a larger business, some don't. You have to find your balance there. But I think my community service and working with nonprofits and community boards and serving on boards is a real problem-solving environment. And that's where you get to bring that kind of life learning to help the community at large. And every board I've served on, that mantra has served me well. Bring me your problems, I will solve them. Or bring us your problem, the board will solve them. So for me, that's been a core of my own go-to.
Well, and to your point, problem solving is person solving. It's people solving.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and when we talk about getting engaged, that's really, you've got to get engaged, and that means you have to be open to the discussion. You can't just be the one yelling, the one complaining, the one saying this is the right way, the other's not. You have to figure out how to approach people and make that happen.
Yep. And I found too, Ted, that you got to bring authenticity to dialogue and conversation. If you've always got a guard up and people don't then trust you, they don't trust that you're really saying what your truth is. And you can say it in a diplomatic, respectful way and still be authentic. You know, I've had my years of yelling and hollering. I mean, I'm certainly not perfect. Can get animated at times. But
no.
I've tried. I know you've never seen that, right, Ted?
No.
I still do at times. But, you know, I think that's also part of being who you are. You know, not being afraid to let people see your full self. And that gives people that kind of authenticity, or what's the word? You know, vulnerability can help others also share what they really think. And when you have that kind of ideation happening, when people are really bringing their best and their thoughts and what they really feel, you get better solutions. Again, it's about creating that culture of, it's okay to say what's on your mind.
Absolutely. And I think the more authentic you are, that makes you more real.
Yeah, for sure.
And people connect with people that they believe are real, and that helps you drive it. Well, I really appreciate this first hour because I've learned a lot more about you. We've kind of talked about a lot of things that you've gone through in your life. But when we get back, we're going to start talking about the board service and the issues.
Great.
And we'll start addressing what we need other people to do Jump in Tucson. And that's the show you're listening to. And I'm your host, Ted Maxwell. I'll be back with Lisa Lavallo on after the bottom of the hour. Welcome back to Jump in Tucson. I'm your host, Ted Maxwell. And we appreciate you enjoying us for the engagement hour. I hope you tune in to Jump in Tucson tomorrow after Wake Up Tucson in the morning. Grant Krueger will be hosting the Wednesday hour as he always does, and he will have Mo Asnani, the owner of the Downtown and D2 dispensaries here in Tucson, and to talk about that burgeoning industry and how its impact to our region. So join Grant tomorrow. It'll be greatly appreciated. As a reminder, I'm with Lisa Lavallo, the Vice President and Market Leader of Cox Communications. And more importantly for me, when I joined the Southern Arizona Leadership Council in 2013, Lisa was on the executive committee, and shortly thereafter, she became the chair of the Southern Arizona Leadership Council. Obviously, a very impactful thing for me, but here's the reality. She's been the chair of Sun Corridor and continues to serve on their chairman's circle. That's the economic development organization of our region. She's been the chair of the Tucson Airport Authority. She serves on the UVA's College of Sciences, the Tucson Medical Center's board. You've been the chair of the Reed Park Zoo. I almost was going to take the lead in from Matt earlier and appreciate having him on the other side of the glass, as always, about the new element. You were the chair of that. We've worked on the 1/10 sales tax. You were a driving force behind that. And all that's being done, as we've kind of alluded, you know, as we're getting towards the sunsets maybe of our career, and we're thinking about what's next and what's moving on, you're stepping up within the Tucson Metro Chamber as the current vice chair, chair-elect. So that's going to be another opportunity for you to chair one of these business organizations. Obviously, as a business leader, a CEO, you've got influence, but that's a lot of time and effort you've put in to support a lot of different boards, and a lot of them being representing the business community. Why? And then what do you think is so important about the role of the business community in a region and its success?
Well, first, I work for a company that believes in community engagement. Cox is a company that encourages, almost expects, all its employees to be volunteers. And if you're volunteering and you can lead. They support their employees and have supported me with the financial capability to do a lot of the things that are required. You know, if you're working with SALC or working, these organizations need resources in order to achieve what they need to achieve. And so,
yes, we do.
I have a company that believes in investing in the community and community organizations, and not just business organizations. They've invested in the zoo. If you ride the carousel, you'll see that's the Cox Carousel. You know, so anywhere that Cox can do a good job. The Desert Museum, they helped do the Pack Rat Playhouse. You know, they always have believed in environmental sustainability. So that at the core, you know, coming into that role, I had that opportunity. And then from there, because I have a passion for Tucson, I love my community, I love all the people that live here, I like our bumps and bruises, I'm good with it. It is natural to accelerate or get even a deeper, more connected mindset when you're serving on these boards. And what has been wonderful about it is I've gotten to see so many different parts of our community. I mean, currently I'm chairing Step Up to Justice, which is an organization that provides free civil legal services to people who cannot afford a lawyer. I didn't even know that people weren't given a lawyer if they couldn't afford one. I mean, I can't even imagine going into a courtroom, Ted, and fighting for, say, child custody without a lawyer there to help represent me. But we have 140,000 people in Pima County every year that have that situation happen to them. So that's a social justice organization that I care deeply about, our company cares deeply about, all the way over to the chamber, right? So what does a modern chamber of commerce need to do to help build relationships between government and the business community and the greater Tucson community so that we can continue to have a responsible, prosperous business and general community? So the chamber has, I think, some opportunity for advancing its mission. I think it has an opportunity to evolve into a more of a modern entity, one that aligns well with not only what the business community's priorities are, but what the broader community's needs are. And also to help navigate with our city council, with the county board of supervisors and other legislators, the right kind of public policy that fits the personality of our community and also allows businesses to expand and grow. So I think the chamber has some great potential. So I'm going to spend some calories there.
Well, the one thing I can promise anybody listening is that you have board chairs and then you have board chairs. And you're not one afraid to get involved. You were at SLC, you were with two general officers. We did give you a call sign because one you wanted one, and we gave you the call sign of Bundle. It works. It's Cox. Cox, a Bundle.
That's right.
Yeah, it was more about the bundle of you never know what you're going to get because you are not afraid to get vocal and get engaged. So going in now with the Metro Chamber and even with your past history with Suncorp and SLC, and you're all still on both of those boards, you are one of the more vocal people for it's important that we step up and use our voice and engage. And can you talk about why that's important, especially when dealing with elected officials and governments?
Yeah. You know, Ted, like I said earlier in my life, I realize I've been given all these great opportunities. I've been given a great education. I've been given great experiences in life. I've traveled a lot. I've had a wonderful family. And I live in a community that's really a caring, loving community. And so I feel like I have been given everything by Tucson. So I'm going to give everything I've got back to her as best I possibly can. And sometimes the harder conversations are when you talk about dealing with city government or county government. You know, you can get at odds on an issue or a policy. And so how do you find a way from a community perspective to help move that forward? And so, yeah, sometimes I get frustrated with decisions that municipalities make or don't make. Sometimes those are strictly business issues, like how fast can we get a permit done? You know, can't we be better at the basic blocking and tackling of government and business working together? Can't we get faster and more efficient? And that's something we all have to work towards. I know customers feel that way about my business. Why can't Cox get better at this? Or why can't you get better at that? So it's not about pointing a finger. We all have that as leaders, a responsibility to try to make sure we're evolving the entities that we're responsible for in a way that supports the community or the customer. And so I think that's really important, moving Tucson forward in all aspects, whether it's, you know, helping people who can't afford an attorney or helping the business community have a better voice with public policy.
And that is a challenge now because the business community and the voters don't often always align, mm-hmm. but sometimes we forget the importance of jobs and opportunities. As you know, SLC, we believe that solution to poverty, to crime, to issues, and definitely to improving your individual's quality of life, every individual's quality of life, is that job and opportunity. So, but when was the last time you heard an elected official say that they're not business friendly? We don't, but there's not necessarily an ease of business.
You know, Ted, I get to work with all different people. People that work for nonprofits are business people. They're running a business that is taking the profit and putting back into their mission. So it's no different than what businesses do. And they're incredibly passionate, thoughtful, experienced, smart people. Our business leaders are regular people that work in businesses. There's some wonderful, amazing people that do incredible things in our community. I mean, that have a lot of wisdom, who have worked internationally and nationally, and they're a wealth of knowledge to a council member or to a supervisor. So, to a city manager or a county attorney, you know. So, being able to really see that as a resource, not as something you have to figure out how to deal with them, but how do you bring them in and ideate with them and find the best overall solution. You know, that I think we have that at our disposal. Tucson is not that big of a place. But I sometimes feel like the business community is not brought in on the front end, or the business community is brought in for something that's very specific to what a certain municipality wants, there's not equal trade, so to speak. And that gets frustrating at times because the business people that I work with are really talented and they're great problem solvers and they want to help.
And I think you hit it on the head a lot. We're not the business organizations as a whole, and the business leaders specifically, the job creators, aren't brought in on the front end of the problem. It's generally at the end when we're having to vocalize what needs to be fixed. So obviously you're one that wants to stay engaged. You want to keep involved. How would you, giving advice to the smaller corporations or the smaller businesses, how is it the best way they can approach getting engaged with the mayor and council of any of the municipalities or the board of supervisors?
Well, I mean, certainly, you have the capability of building a relationship directly. If you want to make that effort and you want to go make an appointment to see your supervisor, especially in the ward in which you live or in the district that you live in, to go and get to know that person, that can be a quick entry into understanding the municipal challenges or to talk about problems. The other is to engage with the organizations that are paid to go and be the advocates, right? The Leadership Council, Sun Corridor, the Chamber of Commerce. And then to hold them accountable to making sure that your voice is being combined with the other voices that I'm sure have the same challenge to go carry that water for them. The power of the Chamber of Commerce or the Leadership Council are the members of the organization. They're the ones that have all the employees. And so when you or Michael Guyman are going to speak to the council, you're representing, in the case of the Chamber, 1,900 businesses, in your case, over 50,000 employees that are employed by the CEOs that are part of SALC. So that should be respected. That should be sought out. That input should be absolutely job one for anyone who is managing any kind of government agency, government entity, is an elected official, because it's not just the elected official. It's the people that work in government that also have a responsibility to be thinking a little more broadly about decision making. You know, I mean,
we sometimes forget that, mm-hmm. that the elected officials are just the public figures. It's the government workers. It's mm-hmm. the city of Tucson staff and personnel. Mm-hmm. It's the county's employees. They're the ones that get the job done. Now, we'd like to have a little bit more push, I think, from their elected officials to make that ease of business a little more straightforward.
Yeah.
But the fact of the matter is those are the folks that we need to be able to vocalize support. And a lot of them do want to do the right thing.
I mean, I think
they're worried about their jobs.
I think there's always going to be some tension, natural tension between government and the general population. And so you're never going to get perfect. I mean, I don't think we could sit down with anyone anywhere in the country and say, do you think that your city government is efficient? And they're going to be like, no, they're not efficient. They're always going to find something the government can do better. And so what's important is accepting that and then be part of solutions or part of making things better versus constantly complaining. You know, the constant complaining, I can't take it. I'm like, all right, so if this is a problem, I'm not just going to complain. I'm going to go try to find out where can I plug in to help make it better. It might not be fully solved, might not be fully solvable, but how do we make the edges a little less sharp?
And Lisa, I think that's one thing that I've been impressed with how you engage, because you're not afraid to say what you see. And so sometimes you have those tough conversations, but you're also the one that's going to sit down and talk about the solutions and what's possible. So I'm going to cut out of this segment at this point, because that's been an incredible conversation. I hope that the listeners that do have businesses out there are involved, or it applies to everybody that lives in this community. Establish a relationship with your elected official.
Yep.
You know, and we can talk later about showing up at the call to the audiences and getting vocal, but you have to have a relationship with your elected official. And if yours isn't doing it, one of them will. Just find the one that's going to support you.
And they want to meet you.
Oh, absolutely.
So it's not like they're not going to want to meet you. They want to meet you.
Absolutely. And Matt, did you like how we gave you a pump fake, like we're going to a break, then we just did it? So we'll get to that break now. You're with Jump in Tucson, Ted Maxwell and Lisa Lavallo, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to Jump in Tucson. Matt Neely's behind the glass, keeping us on time and within the confines and the rules of the radio show. And I've got with me today Brat Poison. Oh, I mean, wait a minute. Brat Poison. I've got Lisa Lavallo. So I'm not going to let that go, because as I was looking through to find out what I didn't know about Lisa, I found that at one point you were competing under the name Brat Poison. Can you want to touch on that at all?
No, so I went to a roller derby bout, they're called. And actually Gabby Giffords was there and Ron Barber, and we were having some beers. And when I was a kid, I was a great skater. I was a skate country every summer, man. I was awesome.
There's a lot
yellow Metaflex wheels.
I believe actually Mr. DeSimone spent a lot of time on roller skates too.
Big time. So anyway, I said, well, I could do this. How hard could it be, right? Mac, I could skate. And I'm like 42. I just started at Cox. And so I went up to this huge gal who skated for the Russian team. I can't remember now what the name of the Russian team was, but it had a Russian kind of name. And I said, hey, I'd like to do that. She said, well, you have to, you know, try out. So I go to the Catalina High School, and they have, they're out at the basketball courts, and we start skating around. They show us how to slide, and, you know, you got all these pads on, and no one has a name. Everybody's going by their handle. And so you get drafted. They come and the teams draft you. So I got drafted into the Furious Truck Stop Waitresses. It was the name of my team.
Okay. Yep. There you go.
I think I was old as their mothers, most of them. And so then you pick your name. And when you pick your name, you're supposed to register it on, like, I don't know, this big registration of roller derby name. Because you can't have someone else's name. Yeah. So anyway, I didn't register, and I went up by rat poison thinking that was good for truck stop waitresses. Well, I'm in my office one day, and my assistant Diane says, there's this woman from Houston calling, and she's rat poison. I'm like, what? So anyway, the original and real registered rat poison in Texas called to say, you cannot be rat poison. So I had to change my name to Ace Benedict.
Very nice.
So I thought that went well with pure structure. Yeah, anyway, well, I got crushed. I was a jammer, and I'm like, this is like the captain of the team. I'm like, no, this is idiot that gets killed by all these people.
Oh, jammer, you're supposed to be clearing the path.
Yeah, they're like, don't you want to be the jammer? I'm like, sure, I can skate fast. Oh, boy.
They always ask the newbie if they want to be the jammer.
Sure.
That's how it goes.
I mean, I was black and blue for a year, but I won the dollar, so.
So there's one topic that I don't want to leave the show without talking about, and it's not going to be probably what you think, because we were going to talk. Broadband access.
Yeah.
That is one of the number one issues that comes up. I mean, I'm on the state transportation board, and we hear about broadband access. Lisa Lavallo's view. We've seen some things in the city that they've tried that, honestly, we both were on the opposite side of what they were doing, and it turned out not to be successful. What do you think the solution to provide quality broadband access to all of our communities?
Well, this is a generational moment for our community and for this country. The taxpayers are putting $45 billion into broadband expansion for areas of our country that are either underserved or unserved with broadband access and quality broadband access. And so Arizona is going to receive about $1 billion to go into every rural area, to go into all these spots and locations throughout all of Arizona that have either horrible broadband signal or none. And there's a process that the ACA, the Commerce Authority, has. They have a broadband office through the mayor, or the governor's office, of how these dollars will then be distributed to our communities.
And that's the key, I'm sure. So
yeah, and I'll tell you, I have to say that so far the process is going well. I mean, I think that the communities are being identified that need help. I think we're going to have some new entries, new competitors who will come in, who may be able to go to some areas. So it's going to increase competition, which can be good for the customer. It's going to provide more access and better quality broadband to more people. And we needed the help of the federal government to get to some of these areas because it's very expensive. So I'm really very bullish on our community's ability to really improve broadband access and quality. And Cox is right there. I mean, we're already 1 gig symmetrical in all the city of Tucson. I mean, we have a great broadband network. We're also in Cochise County. We're expanding and growing in Douglas. We built out new areas like Sycamore Springs and Three Points in Pima County and Huachuca City in Cochise.
Oh, wow.
And Cochise Community College. And I mean, so we're really continuing to grow. So I think I'm very excited. And I think from Cox's perspective, we are in a position to win some of those grant dollars, hopefully a lot of the grant dollars, and build our networks out further. So I think this is a great time. So what we need to do is have a lot of cooperation. We have to have the governments not trying to take that money for themselves to build their own networks, which I think is very dangerous. We've seen in the past, they don't know how to manage broadband networks. So work with the private sector. That's how this program is designed. And take those dollars from the federal government and make Southern Arizona the most connected community in America. Let's do it.
Amen. Work with the private sector. That's how government can be more effective and more efficient. Lisa, thank you for the hour. I've truly enjoyed it. And thank you for all you and Terry do and will continue to do by being engaged.
100%. Thank you, Ted.
Thank you, everyone, for listening to Jump in Tucson. Have a good day. See you next week.